Last week, the first debate of the Republican primary opened with a song and a question about the song by country performer Oliver Anthony. The song became a viral success, seemingly out of nowhere.
His lyrics speak of alienation, of deep frustration with the state of government and of this country. Washington, D.C. is about 100 miles north of Richmond.
There's Richmond north of Richmond. Lord knows it all. Just want to have total control. Want to know what you think. Want to know what you do. And they don't think you know. But I know that you do.
The popularity of Richmond north of Richmond comes not long after the controversial music video for Jason Aldean's Try That in a Small Town went viral and achieved success, especially on the political right.
Try that in a small town. See how far you make it down the road. Around here we take care of our own. You cross that line, it won't take long for you to find out. I recommend you don't. Try that in a small town.
We're taking a look at why country music has been at the center of politics lately and what it can tell us about the genre and our political climate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a country music fan? What do you think of Oliver Anthony's a viral hit? How about try that in a small town? What kind of values do you see expressed in the country music that you listen to? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Our next guests are co-founders of the music newsletter No Fences Review. Charles Hughes is a music writer and historian and director of the Lynn and Henry Turley Memphis Center at Rhodes College. He was born and raised in Wausau and is a UW-Madison alum. Charles, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, it's always great to be on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you for having me.
And David Cantwell is a music writer, author of the book The Running Kind, Listening to Merle Haggard. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me on. I'm from the lower Midwest down in Kansas City, but it's great to be up here with you guys.
You're from the neighborhood, David. We'll accept that for sure. Now, David, at the beginning of August, we saw the top three spots of the Billboard Hot 100, three country songs. I think for the first time in history, we had Fast Car by Luke Combs. We had that Try That in a Small Town. And then Morgan Wallen was up there as well. Before we dig into the politics, what do you make of that trifecta for country music?
Well, I'd like to celebrate it, but I don't think you can separate it from the politics. It's all three of those songs in their different ways, especially the Aldean, Try That in a Small Town, and the Morgan Wallen song, I think are totally, not totally, I take that back, but largely driven by people who are not necessarily country fans trying to boost a particular political agenda, seeing an opportunity to do that, and sending them to the top of the charts through streaming.
Charles, we have these political back and forths over the Oliver Anthony song in particular and the Aldean song and video. This isn't the first time, you know, country music has taken political stands and become political controversy. Does this seem different this time around to you?
In one way, no, because country music, like a lot of cultural forms in the United States, especially those that have been predominantly identified with white people, have always had a tense, if not problematic, tendency to, you know, to demonstrate some of the more problematic and even vicious dynamics in American politics. And certainly, even in its less malicious ways, you can hear things in those songs that are tapping into the anxieties and the anger and a lot of things that you've heard in country music for a long time. You hear a lot of other things in country music, too, which maybe we can talk about. But in another way, it absolutely feels different in the sense that something seems to be kind of happening right now, whether it's just coincidentally or whether it's more coordinated, in which after a couple of years in which country music seemed on the mainstream level to be perhaps kind of opening up a little bit, thanks to the insistence of artists and fans of color and also queer and trans artists and communities. It seems like in response to that now, we're having this kind of resurgence of the angry white men, not only who are kind of staking their claim again to be at the center of the country conversation, but also are really exhibiting a lot of the kind of markers and shorthand and dog whistles that we hear in this particular moment on the right. And another part of that has to do with what David just said, which is this is being fueled not just by streaming and by the digital world, but by a particular set of right-wing media figures. And I think that that's really crucial. That's something that maybe could have happened in earlier generations if such technology existed. But certainly it's happening now, and it's making this moment, I think, a much more amplified situation.
Now, Oliver Anthony, we heard a bit of his song, Rich Man North of Richmond, embraced by conservatives, Republicans playing it to kick off, or Fox playing it to kick off that Republican presidential debate. Now, Oliver Anthony said, well, hang on, guys, here he is in a response video. Try to create some distance, I think, from conservatives promoting his song.
It was funny seeing it at the presidential debate, because it's like I wrote that song about those people. You know, so for them to have to sit there and listen to that, that cracks me up. but it was funny kind of seeing the response to it. Like, that song has nothing to do with Joe Biden, you know? It's a lot bigger than Joe Biden.
David, you wrote a piece for Time Magazine looking at the rise of rich men north of Richmond. Could you talk a little bit about how it was embraced and then what we just heard from Oliver Anthony there?
Well, I think that what we just heard from Anthony is a good example of, you know, what's happened. He's trying to distance himself from Republicans. But then as soon as that exact interview was retweeted by Ted Cruz and favorably saying, it's just like Ronald Reagan said, government is not the solution to your problem. Government is not the solution to your problem. Government is the problem. And it's also emblematic of this entire, I think, Trump era moment when people are constantly sort of trying to say neither Republican nor Democrat. It's what we want to do is tear the whole thing down. And so I think that that's a big part of it. One of the things I would say about his song that I tried to emphasize in the piece was that one valuable thing about it, potentially, about Anthony's song is that he tries to foreground class. He sings about lousy wages for soul-robbing work, jobs you hate but just need the same. Need just the same is like something that country used to do all the time. It specialized in it. But this century, country, and this is especially true of the mainstream subset of country music, has tended to focus on the signifiers of blue-collar culture and instead left the economic troubles behind. So people sing about nowadays living in a small town and driving a truck and drinking beer or tequila, but there's rarely any sense that anyone has to actually get up and go to work in the morning. And so that Anthony is recognizing that is, I would like to see more of that on country radio. But then he immediately pivots to punching down in this punitive way against people who are on welfare, people who he thinks are overweight, people who he thinks don't make good choices with their dollars. And that's a classic trap. That goes back to the Reagan era welfare queen with all its ugly racial implications, and about trying to pit one group of struggling folks against another group of struggling folks and making sure that the rich men are the ones who just get richer while the poor people get poverty.
Talking to music writers David Catwall and Charles Hughes, creators of the music newsletter No Fences Review, looking at some political controversies on a couple country music songs, country music hits. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Rob is with us in Madison. Rob, hi.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the topic. I really appreciate this because, you know, I've listened to the Jason Aldean tune. I know that Jason was on stage in Las Vegas when that mass shooting occurred, and I know that he was impacted greatly by that. And I'm not sure, just exactly without hearing it from Jason Aldean, what his message really is in that song. I do advocacy work in the community, people of color. I'm in Wisconsin. I've gone into small towns where black men have inexplicitly been killed and no one was ever charged. And I have listened to that song, and for me, it's got a double meaning. I look at it and go, try that in a small town is kind of like, that's the most likely place for a police cover up. So any idea if any of you have any input into what Jason may have thought about in that song? Maybe he didn't even write it.
Rob, thanks for the call. And Charles, I think Rob is correct. That was written for Jason Aldean, not by Jason Aldean. Right. But your thoughts on Rob's thoughts about small towns of Jason Aldean.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that call. Thank you. Thank you, Rob. I mean, Aldean didn't write the song, which doesn't really matter because in a sense, you know, Nashville country, like a lot of popular genres, has always been about a relationship between individual songwriters and performers, right? The only reason it does matter is when Aldean kind of starts talking about how this is this true expression of his belief, you know, like it does beg the question of, okay, the song was written and then you recorded it, right? But I think absolutely that there is a signaling going on with Try That in a Small Town that speaks to what Rob was talking about. Now, of course, one of the things that it also, you know, there's a lot of folks from small towns and, you know, Wausau's not a tiny town, but it's not a huge place either, right? Like, and like, you know, small towns are also not necessarily the only place, certainly, where this kind of violence happens. But there is something really, I think, very telling and dangerous about the rhetoric that Aldean employs in this song, because it taps into a much longer historical usage of this separation, the supposed separation between this peaceful small town and the crime-filled big city. And it goes back earlier than country music and more and wider than country music. I mean, in a sense, this is straight out of how in the 19th century, blackface minstrelsy, which was, you know, an incredibly popular form of theatrical entertainment, including especially in the urban north, right, kind of harkened back to this supposed bucolic, sweet, sunny south of the old days, right? And that was accompanied by this implicit and sometimes explicit threat that if anybody came in there and caused trouble, which included things like, you know, trying to push back against injustices or trying to do things like that, that they would face violence. So to me, what Aldean's message is pretty simple. It's pretty clear. And I think beyond the connection to the history, the other thing that, you know, even before I saw the video, which was just odious in the way that it employed, you know, perfectly legal, constitutionally protected activity as being things that supposedly had to be taken care of in the small town. Even before I heard that, you know, I heard lyrics about how, oh, if you, you know, come to a small town and try to, you know, defy the police, or come to a small town and try to do the drug dealing. And like, those are signals that I remember hearing growing up in Wisconsin that were very clear racial shorthand. And also now, you know, when you're talking about the police, that is purely existing in a post Black Lives Matter moment. So I'm not sure what his message is, but I think he's been pretty clear, and I think the song is pretty clear, that it is absolutely the kind of threat or the kind of promise, maybe, that Rob is accurately recognizing there.
Rob, thanks for the call. We're talking to music writers Charles Hughes and David Cantwell, co-founders of the music newsletter No Fences Review, looking at trends in country music, how they reflect and interact with our current political landscape. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want your favorite country musicians to take political stands one way or the other? Have you followed some of the songs we're talking about? Maybe talked about them with members of your family, your friends, or coworkers? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with music writers Charles Hughes and David Cantwell, co-founders of the music newsletter No Fences Review. We're talking to them about how American politics are reflected and influenced by, maybe, country music. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, David, you mentioned earlier there are other themes out there in country music, other voices. I want to give a listen to one here. Tyler Childers, who wrote this song in the wake of the 2020 George Floyd protests.
It's called me belligerent. It's took me for ignorant, but it ain't never once made me scared. Constantly worrying, kicking, fighting, begging to breathe.
David, country music isn't just conservative voices. Can you talk about the varieties of perspectives out there?
There's quite a bit. That Tyler Childers song is fantastic, and he's one of the few, who's really come out and tried to sort of say, okay, these are my people. A lot of them are conservative. I'm going to try to, you know, just talk to them in a song about the very things that they're concerned about. And so my hat's off to him. He also, as your listeners may know, recently released just a straight up love song. But then when he chose to make a video of it, he made it two working class men, two miners who fell in love with one another. And that is an actual, in this moment when there's a lot of, to use the buzzword, toxic masculinity, which I hear definitely in the Jason Aldean, and I hear definitely in Oliver Anthony and so many others, you know, to hear him sort of push back against that, I'm really impressed by Childers there. I wish more country artists who are associated, at least in the popular imagination, with the left or the liberal side of the American political discourse would speak up. Dolly Parton, Willie Nelson, people like that, mostly they've kept their mouths shut. A lot of artists, though, are doing a great job talking back to that. I think one of the things I know Charles and I wanted to do today was to sort of just, like, you know, as much as we can, just like list all of the artists that are off, all of the country and country adjacent artists that are making progressive and excellent music. I'll start that list if Charles wants to join in, but like Luke Combs, his Fast Car hit is a version of the Tracy Chapman mm-hmm. Fast Car song. One of her great descendants is Joy Ladekins, and her album this year, Proof of Life, might be my favorite album of the year. It's not going to get on country radio stations, but that's not because of how it sounds. Brittany Spencer, Tanner Adele, your readers, listeners may know Brandy's Clark and Carlisle, Yola, Amethyst Kia, Dia Victoria. I could go on and on. Charles could too. This is one of the things that all of this controversy around these right wing talking points that get brought up in country obscures is that this is one of the great moments in country music history, and so much of it is out there and no one is really talking about it as much as they could be. My own personal dream of a country radio format would be one that is, you know, egalitarian, that is multiracial, democratic, right? And it's there. If you get off the radio and begin to listen to all these other, some of those artists I just mentioned, and so many more, it's right there. It's happening. It's taking shape. And whether it turns into a genre of its own or it gets melded into the country music as it's popularly known, this is all, I'm not optimistic about any of that happening, but for music fans, it's happening right now. This is such a fiercely an exciting moment in country music.
Charles, before we go back to our callers, do you want to add a couple names to David's list?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and David is 100% right. And yeah, I mean, this is such a great time for country music, and this is such a great time to learn about country music that you, through ways other than the radio, or through ways other than the kind of standard channels. You know, a couple names who immediately popped to mind. I absolutely amen all of the artists that David named. I want to shout out Adeem the Artist, who is an incredible singer-songwriter, whose most recent album is just really powerfully affecting. I do want to acknowledge people like Maren Morris, who is one of the few kind of mainstream successful country artists who is really fully in that mainstream space, who has been really, really assertive and active, and sometimes at the, you know, to the detriment of her image in terms of country music. You know, Jason Aldean has previously said some very nasty things about Maren Morris because she had the audacity to suggest that trans rights were human rights. But she's fantastic, and her colleagues in the High Women are great. There's a great new album that just came out by a group called One, the Duo, O-N-E, the Duo, that is this amazing country pop record that is not only a really incredible duo of Black women, but is one of them is the RZA's daughter from the Wu-Tang Clan, and the other is a Wu-Tang former backup singer, and they just made an incredible country record that ought to get played everywhere, and it won't. But there's so much good stuff, you know, and so many amazing artists who are not only pushing back, but pushing out, pushing, like, you know, insisting on that big tent, you know, what the great bluegrass artist Molly Tuttle calls the big backyard. And it's a wonderful time to be a fan, even as it's also discouraging in some ways.
I want to bring on one more caller. Joe is with us in Watersmeet, Michigan. Joe, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Joe?
I wanted to say that I believe you guys have the meaning of Aldine's song completely wrong. And I believe what it is about, from friends that I've talked to. I have black friends. There's an Indian tribe that lives in my town, and I am from a small town. I've been in a small town for almost 50 some years. And I come from a town population of about 800. And everyone that I've talked to have said, you know, Aldine is correct in the meaning of his song as far as we will stand up for anyone and everyone. It does not matter what their race, income, if they're black, Asian, Indian, it does not matter.
Joe, thanks for the call. We just have a few moments left. Charles, Joe has a different read on the meaning.
Well, very quickly, that's not what the song says at all. And I mean, I certainly think people can hear things in it, but that's not what the song says. The song says that if you come into a small town and cause trouble, we will deal with you. And I mean, I certainly don't want to take away from Joe's experience or his black friends that he has. But the reality is, when you hear that song, I think there's a very clear reason why, when a lot of people heard that song and saw that video, what we immediately thought of is the violence that he says over and over and over again. So while I think there's plenty of space and wonderful songs about that small town community, I don't know that Jason Aldean is suggesting that in the song or the video. And I kind of wish that what Joe is talking about was what Jason Aldean is talking about.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guests, Charles Hughes and David Cantwell. You can follow their work at No Fences Review. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.